Women. This is Soy Chingona. I am your host, E. Marie Erica, and I am here with two special ladies today that I'm very excited to sit with. And why don't you guys introduce yourselves?
One of you.
Tell us about your name and who you are today.
My name is Lia Rose Gallegos, and I'm here today with my daughter, Ella Rose Flores. She's eating chips in the background. Who I am today, so...
Mommy.
Today, here
Mama.
She is.
Mama.
Okay, hold on, I'm going to answer the question. Okay. So, I'm a mom, and my daughter's 2 years old.
Mommy, I'm a sister.
Okay. She wants stickers.
She wants.
And I'm here today with her because I couldn't find a babysitter, and that's kind of my life. I'm a musician, so I'm a vocalist, a percussionist with Las Cafeteras. We've been together for, 10 years now?
Wow. Woo! Long time. Wow.
Yeah, it's been a long time. So I'm a musician, a vocalist. I'm also a business owner, so I co-own a yoga studio called People's Yoga. We're in East LA. We're the first and only yoga studio in East LA.
So amazing.
And it's a beautiful space. We offer bilingual yoga in English and Espanol. We offer family classes, prenatal, postnatal, and just a variety of yoga for people that aren't generally marketed in the yoga world. And... I want to be a soccer player, but I think I retired.
Think you retired.
Yeah, I used to be a soccer player. I think I'm pretty retired by now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm a daughter, a mother, a wife. I'm a friend, Denise's friend. And your friend too now.
I love it.
And that's pretty much sums up what I do. Who I am, I'm just a chingona trying to learn how to be better versions of myself and have a positive impact in the world.
Yeah, which you two are both creating, and that's why I wanted to come up here and be with you guys and feel that energy that you guys bring onto stage. I wanted to feel that personally and sit down with you, so I thank you for that. Just go ahead and introduce yourself.
Girl, it's a hard question.
You know, it's
kind of
like
I'm like having an existential moment right now.
Right. Yeah.
And especially how you're saying how your intention behind that question is so that we don't only revisit who we've been in the past.
Right.
Although we have to be informed by that, right, in our present state. And it's so much easier to say who we've been.
Right.
Almost to like, you know, like give reason to who we are now.
Yeah.
And I have a hard time with that question. Like, honestly, I don't know how to answer that. I am a woman. I am a musician. I am a writer. I am a boss lady. I'm a comadre. I'm a social worker. I'm a dancer. I'm a seeker. I'm a person who likes to look at cultivating spaces of healing through body connection. But I think I'm pretty much a work in progress.
I think we all are.
Yeah. And so, I mean, but I also have to honor myself and say, like, I'm a leader, and I'm a person who inspires.
Yeah.
And I look to the reflection of other people being inspired by me so I can be inspired by myself, because I have a hard time looking in the mirror, like figuratively and literally looking in the mirror and saying, you know, I'm proud of you, and saying I'm beautiful, and saying like I'm powerful. And so I think when I try to cultivate these spaces, and I think the majority of it has to do with dance and movement and speaking truth with and for and by women.
Mm-hmm.
It's so that I can constantly remind myself that I owe that to myself too, and that I have to be compassionate and gentle with myself in the fierceness of who I am for other people.
Right. And I like that you say that.
Dang,
too.
Girl.
I know.
You did great for someone who's like, oh, I don't really know how to answer that. And I just like flowed out of you.
I'm all like interpretive dance out here.
Okay, you ask me.
But it is a beautiful thing that you express, you know. What we're doing right now is something that we, let me put this, what you're expressing and what you're going through is something that you
Mommy.
Go through right now, right? Mommy, we're not in positions where we communicate, been there, done that. And I think that's the important part for people to be able to connect with, right? Before meeting you two, I just know you guys through Las Cafeteras, and I just know your music. I don't know who you are as a person, and I didn't do any research because I could have went on, you know, social media, and I could have dug deep and like tried to figure out like more, but I didn't want to do that because I wanted our interaction to also be organic, and it feels really awesome. Like as soon as meeting you guys, you're so warm and so like willing to give and share, and that's important because you do share everything about you. And you put that on stage. And that shows, because when I saw you guys perform, that's what I felt. I felt all of you was in it. Mm-hmm. And then to see you ladies with a group of men who seem just as powerful, but man, what you guys bring is something different. So tell me more about Las Cafeteras. And so you guys have been together 10 years, which is a long time. Tell me a little bit about that journey and how you guys got involved with that.
Cute crying effect. Las Cafeteras happened by the power of the universe telling us that we were more than we believed. And we never planned to be a band, to travel. We never thought that we even had like the right to do that. And for a long time, we kind of surrendered to the idea and silenced our music and the way we sang and the way we wrote. We started playing at a community center called the Eastside Cafe, which for many years was basically our home away from home. For Jose and I are co-founders of that space from the days of Mecha in college. Okay. We went to Casa de Ley together. And this was early on. So a place that was, you know, considered to be a state of mind turned into an actual physical space where it was at each one teach one for the community. Energies are always recycled there, so you always see different people, different projects being cultivated there. And one of those was a Son Jarocho project. So there was like, I don't know, like 20 of us that would meet just for a class. You know, a lot of us knew each other from organizing, from doing different kinds of activism around the community. As students, as also like community seekers, mm-hmm. We started playing this music, and I think for a lot of us, it was a way that we felt reconnected. And as a Chicana, I know that a lot of my journey was trying to like find scraps of who I was through Mexican anything. I'm born in Monterey Park, raised in Southeast LA, and like went through the journey of like being a pocha to being a Chicana to like, you know, depending on where you are who the people kind of like label you as, right?
Right.
And part of that was me also giving respect and honor to like my Spanglish language, to my scrappiness and rascuachesness of just being in the world and being a pocha, learning a Mexican instrument and a Mexican music, and then like really just giving honor to that and like understanding that there's people that will never think I'm authentic anything,
right.
Authentic Mexican, authentic American, even though I am both and I'm all of that, and I create that for this world, you know. And so as Las Cafeteras, I think for a lot of us, like it kept kind of like whittling away who wanted to be part of this project. And then especially when we had elders of the music and of our community telling us like, you need to stop because this is disrespectful. Like
right.
We were like, oh, we do, like, what are we doing? You know? And we were really sad about it. And then we had to have this conversation and be like, no, your voice, like me saying, Leah, like your voice is necessary and needed and important. And I need to hear you like belt that out,
yeah.
You know, because I need to feel like I matter in this world and you help me do that. And then her telling me that as well, you know, and a lot of it had to do with like helping us tend to our wounds,
right.
Our identity, like wounds,
yeah.
but also like just as people who have lived different lives and really saying, hey, like, tell me your story, you know, like, let's talk about that. And also like, let me hug you and embrace you. And I think in writing our music, we do a lot of that for each other in our collective and ourselves, but also like for the world. I think it's so surprising that we are where we are. Mm-hmm. I think I went on a tangent. Hit it, Leah. She's more focused. No. I know, she's more focused than I am.
That was all of it. That's a wrap. Yeah, I mean, I think she kind of touched on the essence of what we do and how we started and where we come from and why we do what we do. You know, and I think we're really grateful to have this music to be able to sort of pass on and share.
Right.
And we have the privilege of traveling the world now and being put on a stage to share not only our music and our message, but really, you know, not only our culture, but to like scream it and scream it proud.
Right.
And I think we say things on the stage that are not common things in music.
Right.
Like Black Lives Matter and, you know, like this land is for everybody. You know, we say things that come from our stories. You know, most of our parents coming from Mexico are coming from other countries or native to this land, or our parents' parents or ancestors. And so also growing up in LA, like LA is really a city of the world. And so we grow up surrounded by people from all different places and spaces. And so we kind of build this real communal experience where we, you know, and coming from the East Side Cafe as well, like we learned about this Zapatista-inspired philosophy of each one teach one and creating a world that we want to live in. And so I think we're trying to transfer, you know, like our beliefs into a song and then sing that song in a way where people can receive it as a gift or as medicine or as hope or as, you know, some juice to keep them going. Because as we all know, we're living in a really crazy time. And there's a lot of stuff happening in this world that makes it really difficult to stay hopeful and to stay positive, and so we want to be at that light, that medicine, that hope for people to grab onto and keep doing the really important and necessary work that they do.
How do you guys get past, there's this thing, what you were touching on earlier, there's this thing called imposter syndrome, right? And it's something that people who are, especially Latinos or Mexican American like myself too, have struggled with identity issues, right? Of like trying to get more immersed in my culture and then yet having someone tell me that I'm not brown enough, that I'm not the way that I'm thinking is on a different spectrum, right? So through your guys' music, I'm sure what you were saying in the beginning, like getting that started, do you guys still get that now where you have people that are giving you backlash on your guys' music or who you represent today?
Yeah, totally. Every day. I think, you know, and it's heartbreaking.
Definitely.
And that's hard, I think, especially when it's the people that in your journey were the most impactful in giving you strength to be, just be. And then it just is a reminder, you know, of how each person is really impacted to believe that we can. But I mean, I am a survivor of imposter syndrome like all my life, you know.
That's what it sounds like. That's why I brought up the question.
But I think when you allow people the medicine, that comes back to you. I used to be a psychotherapist. I'm a clinical social worker. So that's what I've studied as my career. So definitely, like, did not ever think I was going to be able to be or wanted to do this, you know, as my life work. But I think once I stopped I stopped telling myself, like, I'm not supposed to do this, and started telling myself this is simply an offering. Like, something's been offered to me, and I'm taking the medicine that I was given and offering that in my own capacity. That made it easier and more, like, natural.
Yeah.
You know? And I think specifically, like, with women, it's, you know, the music industry is so bro-y.
Yeah.
It is, you know what I mean? And, like, but that's, like, a fuel for me. Like, sometimes, like, even the guys in my band, they're like, God, why are you always so mad? And yeah, I'm like, dude, I'm not mad. But if the sound guy doesn't want to listen to what I tell him I need to be that. Or if I'm speaking for the band and, like, on behalf of us and people, like, tend to not want to listen, I have to be kind of like a regañona, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then once they meet me, I'm like, hey, cute, whatever.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like the way we walk in the world. Kind of like when you're walking down the street and you have to, like, have that, like, resting fuchi face.
Yes.
Because you don't want to get messed with. I feel like as a woman in this business, like, I am constantly being, like, patriarchy is capitalizing off, is that, like, as a group, we're capitalizing off me and Leah, like, being women on stage, mm-hmm. because people enjoy that, romanticize it.
Right.
You know, there's fierceness in breaking the, just, like, the bro mold of, like, musicianship on the stage.
Especially when you're talking about stuff that's so strong, right? And so much power behind that. Because that's what I see, is that, you know, when I had seen you guys, I see all these men, and they're within their power, and they're talking about these things, but then when you guys deliver it, mm-hmm. and for a woman, you know, for me, it's different when I see that. I was just like, yes, yes, like, everything that you guys were putting out. But that happens a lot, and not just in the music industry. I think that's been generations and generations of women having to deal with stuff like that in all different, you know, aspects of being a businesswoman and being in the office. And
yeah, you have to break through it.
Yes.
And some people might label that as being
bitchy,
you know, yeah, bitchy, or just like
overpower, angry Latina,
or who does she think she is,
angry Chicana. Yeah.
And kind of like owning that, right?
Right.
Because once I explain that to the guys in our group, like, they're totally, like, in a learning place. So that's the difference. It's like allowing the learning space too, where, like, they don't know my experience, but they're at least asking, and they're taking a step back. But even in, like, how do you negotiate that on the stage, right? Because even, like, a lot of people will be like, why don't you talk more on the mic? Why don't they let you talk more on the mic? And then I started trying to do that, and I'm like, I just don't feel comfortable sometimes. And me being able to be authentic to myself and be like, look, that's just not me. I need to take a breath because I'm singing all the songs. So you go ahead, like, do cute things with the audience while I, like, take a sip of water, and then I'll come back. And so it's almost also not letting one be led by what other people think.
Their expectations.
It's like, well, no, I am that just because I am.
Right.
You know? And I think it's important to be surrounded by folks who may not identify as a woman or as femme. And have them being in that space that they want to learn and be empowered by who you are, and also understand that they're verbalizing, like, who you are as a powerful force is really important too, because allyship is necessary.
Yeah.
What do you think, Leah?
What about your role being a mom and being involved in music, and how is that portrayed, even with your family, friends, and your band members?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I'm still getting the hang of this being a mom thing.
Yeah.
It's been a huge transition, or at least it was for me, like, from being me, Leah, to Leah plus one.
Yeah.
I'm really lucky to be in two, you know, a co-owner of two organizations where I have a seat at the table, and we act as, you know, a collaborative, in a collaborative way. And so with Las Cafeteras, you know, I've been super blessed to be able to, like, express what life is like for me as a mom and a mom musician, and how I need space or how I need accommodations or whatever, just to kind of take the autonomy to create this like work-life balance for me as a mom. So I've been super blessed to have this band and to have People's Yoga to sort of like carve out this transition from me, Leah, to Leah plus one as a mom. And I just want to add too, like in regards to this imposter syndrome, you know, I think there's moments for all of us where we start to break through our sentiment of feeling like we don't belong.
Mm-hmm.
And it's different for all of us. I remember like in college, I was a super athlete and didn't care anything about academics until I started taking Chicano Studies classes. And that was sort of like a huge transition or transformation like time in my life, because I started to get an understanding of who I was and where I come from, mm-hmm. and how I exist in this world. And it was a huge breakthrough of my own imposter syndrome in college. And I think, you know, again, we all have these moments where we're able to break through that ourselves. Like Denise and I, this music, I think, has really helped us to break through that. Having a stage and having a microphone and being told, you know, or implied of how we're supposed to act as female musicians or how we're supposed to act as females in general, and breaking through that and really reclaiming that for ourselves, that we define that. And I think it's really important as we do that for ourselves that we encourage and inspire other people to do that for themselves as well, because what I've learned is nobody's going to do it for us,
right?
And we're going to continuously be told who we're supposed to be or how we're supposed to act or where we're not supposed to be.
Yes.
But it's really our responsibility to say, no, actually I do belong here.
Own it, like you were saying, being authentic and who we are.
She found more snacks.
She's like, I will dig through here and find more stuff.
Another note,
and that's time for granola. When you guys first started getting into it, tell me a little bit about your family, your upbringing. Were you supported in these decisions? Because it sounds like you guys both did a lot of things that weren't in the norm, right? Of like who you were and who you raised. So were you supported in those?
Let's do a lifeline. Can we call my mom?
Yes and no. Yes and no.
Tell the truth, Mom. Just tell the truth.
Oh, but your mom now, and your mom and dad. Her mom and dad pick her up from the airport.
Dude, they love it. My mom gives me, like, a whole, like, sack of burritos to go. She's like, please eat.
Yeah, right? That's what she's concerned about. Mija, are you eating?
For real. Yeah.
But it wasn't always, but it wasn't always like that.
No, I mean, I think it's really hard. And I had to negotiate that for myself, and I still do. Mm-hmm. A lot of, well, my parents, my mom is from Jalisco, Mexico. My dad is from Baja California, Mexico. And they came here in the 70s. They were undocumented my whole childhood. And I know, like, the constant message was that my sister, who's 5 years older than me, and myself, that the way we're gonna like make it in this world is we had to go to school, we had to go to college, we had to buy our own house. Because my dad would say, "Nunca sabes con cuál me la lengua vas a quedar," you know. So basically, I'm like, so I can't depend on a man. Is that what you're saying? But then, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know. And so for my dad was very much a feminist, and he'll like deny it now, but he's raised two feminist daughters who don't shut up.
Yeah.
You know, and I said, Dad, like you had to put yourself in that space, and you decided that we were gonna be strong women and that you were gonna teach us how to navigate this world, and now it's coming back to bite you in the butt.
Right.
You know, because he's like, wait, what have I created?
Yeah. He's like,
hold on. Can you please give me a grandchild? And I'm like, here's this album.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so you know, I grew up in a traditional Mexican home. My first language was Spanish, which I forgot in middle school and then relearned in college. And so for them, you know, I went to Cal State LA. I got my bachelor's in social work, and I did that because I had my own social worker in high school. I suffered through a lot of, you know, stuff with body image and you know, moving in the world in my own body and loving myself. And then in college, I struggled a lot with, I had a major depression and anxiety disorder, and so I would take medication for that. And so for me, it was really important to create spaces for women to be able to express themselves and be validated in an empowering way in their own terms. And so I constantly struggled with that, like, who am I supposed to be based on my parents' struggle, and like, how am I gonna make it worth it? And then how am I gonna satisfy my own need to like live like and thrive in this world? And I'm still, you know, struggling with that. I got my master's in clinical social work, and I worked as a psychotherapist in Chicago before I came back during the South Central Farm Movement. There's too much happening in my home that I needed to come back to.
Yeah.
And so, you know, my dad, I think especially, felt really, or feels really hurt and betrayed by my leaving, like, a good, what he said, like, you had a good job with insurance and, you know, retirement and all that.
Yeah.
And for him, I think it was mostly, like, a betrayal for all that he did for us to not have to struggle.
Right.
You know? So we never can really talk about money or, like, student loans because they get really upset with me. And my mom, I think, mostly is scared for my safety. She is, I think they're both, like, you know, talk about reputation a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are people going to say?
Mm-hmm.
But I think secretly my mom is really proud that I was able to break through this mold of, like, who I'm supposed to be, because I think that's how she lived her life. And I think there's a lot of need in her for more. And so I think she's surprised, because I was really shy growing up, and I still am sometimes. But I think she's like, oh my God, like, you're doing this. And
yeah.
Like, where did you get this from? Even my dad's like, ¿de dónde te sale tanta risa o tanto baile? And I'm like, I can't have been the first one in my lineage to have this, but I'm the first one that is going against, like, what everyone wants me to do and doing it, even though it doesn't always feel right. And so, like, I think my parents are like, they don't get it, they don't understand it, and I constantly have to have that conversation about, like, you didn't give me just the opportunity to go do work a 9-to-5, but you gave me the opportunity to be able to choose.
Right.
And I can always
that's
go back
hard
to that.
For them to understand. And I understand
like,
why
you're
that
gonna
would
be an artist.
They lived a different life.
A survival
like, mode. Like the whole entire time. So to see you take that and take it to a different level, I'm sure that's really confusing for a parent of like, I'm proud of you, Mija, but this is what I thought you were gonna go do, and now
like,
you're
go
doing,
get a house, you know? And I'm like, I can't afford it, you know, but I can't say that.
Right, because it's almost
age,
like that
they
creates
had, like,
your worth,
right?
Like for people who are immigrants, like, and having their children here, like, that's your value, that's your worth, is that college degree, is that house that you home, is the marriage, is the kids. So when you don't have that, they're like, wait, what? And you're happy? Like, how can you be happy and not have those things?
Yeah, I'm like, but Dad, my spirit is soaring.
Right.
You get that? I'm like, what? You know? But I, you know, I think at the end of the day, like, there's a there has to come, like, a piece to the understanding and knowing that your children are fulfilled and can live and laugh. And yes, you know, of course the necessities of a home and a car and, you know, eating every day, of course those are like the check-offs. But I think if you're in a home where you can laugh with your family and you can, you know, dance and you can be silly and still be proud, I think at the end of the day, like, there's some kind of like sigh of relief,
right?
You know,
there's this measurement of life, and that's different. The way your measuring skill is much different than what's traditionally taught.
Yeah.
What it's
and my sister's a writer too, so I think
really?
It's very different for them.
Okay.
Like, wow, like, I think also it's an opportunity for them to learn from us and to have that, like, surprise. I think they're surprised at who we ended up being, but I think they're also really happy.
Yeah.
But I think they think it's their parental duty to always be like, do better, do more. And I appreciate. Yeah.
Now that I'm a parent, I know that being a parent, when your child is born, you also birth this, like, immense
Bamba.
She wants Bamba. This immense, like, worry. for your child. That I never understood in my parents or anybody's parents until I had her. And it like hurt, it like physically hurts your body, your worry for an individual. And so I think that's where it comes from. Like most of us, all of cafeteras had full-time jobs with benefits before we left our full-time jobs with no benefits.
Yeah, right.
to embark on this journey of being artists and musicians. And with that, yeah, we left a lot of things that will keep you stable as far as like material things go, financial and housing and food and all the things we need are necessary to live. And so I think that's where it comes from, you know, or a lot of it comes from is that our parents, you know, are essentially love us and care for us and want the best for us. And you can see that, as, you know, if you look at Denise's parents, like her mom packs her 20 burritos before tour.
and makes me 20 dresses.
And then meets her at LAX to, like, greet her off the plane. And so I think we see that in our parents in so many different ways. Even though, of course, there still is that, like, you know, maybe you should go get a full-time job with benefits.
Right.
Yeah. So
how was your support growing up and growing into you being in the band and stuff and you doing this yoga studio?
Yeah. I mean, I think there was a pretty big transition point, you know, of shock for my parents because I was working full-time at USC. And the thing about working at USC, too, is if you work there 10 years, then your children get free tuition. So, you know, it had a lot of benefits, my path over there. And so I remember telling my mom, like, I'm going to leave my job and be a musician. And I think at the time, actually, I decided I was going to be a musician and, like, start really embarking on the yoga journey as well. So I did my teacher training right like pretty soon after I left my job at USC. So yeah, I remember there being like a super shock period, a period of shock where they were both like,
"Yeah,
you're gonna need insurance." And I think I haven't had insurance for like
moving back
maybe
in, are you?
7 years.
They're like, so what does that mean for us exactly?
I know.
How's that going to affect our home right now?
Yeah, so I think, but I think with time, you know, like, Cafeteras has really had a lot of, like, celebratory moments. We were on a novela, like La
what?
Bamba Rebelde is a theme song for a novela. We played with Lila Downs.
No, that novela thing was, like, a highlight in my family. Like, even in Mexico, like, le llamó my nina called my dad. I heard Denise's song on the novela, and then my grandma got on the phone, and my grandma was, like, not the kind of person that liked being on the phone, but she's like, yeah, we saw the novela, and I was like, I made it, people, I made it,
now you see.
And in August, we're performing at the Hollywood Bowl with Gypsy Kings, which Gypsy Kings are, like, some of our parents' favorite.
I know. Yeah.
And so I think our parents are seeing us, like, break through a lot of the things that they fear.
Right.
And seeing us embrace it and do it kind of fearlessly. And so I think that's also sharing this energy or this this vibration of being fearless.
Right, because a lot of times too with entrepreneurs and with artists and people that are creating things out of nothing, that's the hard part is finding the support when there's nothing to show, right? Because everybody sees the results and sees the aftermath and they don't
the glamour.
See, part of it. So it's like in between, I went through the same thing. I left a very good job and I went to my husband and I was like, I'm depressed and anxiety out to the point where I don't know what I need to do in my life, but this is not it.
Right.
And I have to leave and I'm sorry, but you're going to have to trust me that I'm going to make the right moves. Luckily, he was supported with that and he was like, well, you're not happy and that's not making me happy.
Mm-hmm.
This is creating something different. So if you see something that you can do for yourself that's going to make you happy, then take a chance and do it. Where other people on the outside, like my parents, are like, what the hell are you doing? What?
What are you
happy? What, yeah, like, what the, get happy. What's that?
like, no. We're happy, but we'll
pay your bills. Like, what are you talking about?
No, but
about?
That's a beautiful thing, I think, with our generation. You know, I think there's so much. Like, I just went to the We Rise LA event yesterday. And, you know, as a clinician, who one has, you know, has depression and anxiety still. I live with that. I had an eating disorder from the age of 12 to like my 20s, and I treat that as an addiction almost. Like, you always can be triggered back into that behavior. As someone who has worked with psychiatrists to medicate my clients and my patients, like, and as someone who also lived in this like brown and down kind of existence where like medication is like the industrial complex and blah, 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 like where we don't, you know, we're being drugged into being robots. Like, now to come to a place where people who are organizers, activists, movement makers, bridge builders are also talking about mental health.
Yes.
Like, it's such a beautiful thing, you know, and, and I think I'm constantly curious to like to really even institutionalize the school of that, you know. I'm always like, maybe I want to get my PhD, you know, because I still, as a brown woman from the hood, it's still like not, I went to school where I was oftentimes the only one person of color, you know, and that was in like 2005. That was a long time ago, and so I was often the only one. And so now that there's a bigger community, I love that, because we need to be speaking about that, because I think our generation is the generation that is able to liberate and like peel off the layers, you know, that our ancestors needed to. And I still have to understand, like, this comes from somewhere else, right? And I'm being taken care of, but I'm also given the responsibility to change things for the coming generations,
right?
And we're able to do that with music, and like Leah does it with yoga and music, and raising a child to be a girl, to be free and wild, and eat all the snacks. You know what I mean? They didn't let me eat all the snacks, which is why I'm eating disorder. You know, the little things. But just being able to do that, like, we heal ourselves. We see each other.
Right.
We allow the storytelling, and we allow mistakes and to fall and pick each other up. Right. You know, I think if I've learned anything in cafeteras is that we're all gonna fall at one point, and we have to have the people that see the magic in us and let us like rise up and like rise up together.
Right, because that healing process never ends.
Right.
That healing is everyday work.
It is.
You know from what you're doing
and it's work.
What you've been doing. It is work. And I don't I think it is beautiful that we are being in. She wanted more. She's like, mom's distracted right now. I'm going to open those right now.
Fix my window.
But I do think it is a beautiful thing, because that's, you know, part of why I created my platform for the podcast was because everything I was going through, I knew there was women out there that were feeling the same way, going through the same thing. But then I was like, why do I feel so alone in this process? But I know that I'm not.
Right.
You know, so it was this thing of like, I need to create something that I can let things out and let other people let it out.
I love it.
You know, so that we're able to connect with one another and feel that energy and vibe off of each other and like what we have to offer.
Yeah.
Because I do, when I started going through therapy and started doing healing, my family was like, why? What do you mean?
Like hashtag estás loca?
Yeah, like are you crazy? Because you seem fine. Mm-hmm. You smile all the time, and you're taking pictures, and you're doing this and doing that.
Like,
see,
like, you're just being dramatic. You just want attention. And
you're being a victim. Like, well, you know what? I could be the victim if I wanted to because of everything I've gone through in my life, but I'm actually not being the victim by healing.
Right.
And I'm actually not being the victim by creating platforms and creating what you guys are doing, the yoga in this community. And I told you, as soon as I walked in, I was like, it's amazing to me, like, right away feeling the energy in here. I was like, yes, like, she just created something what the community needed, right? Mm-hmm. And what they wanted, and it wasn't being offered to them for so many different reasons and so many different political reasons that we can get into, but it's just beautiful that you're creating that, and then you guys do that with your music. Has your music always been the take that it is right now? Has it always been like a political background in it?
You know, I think, well, I think for us, we've never really defined it as political. Like, we've never really seen it as, like, we're going to do political music.
Okay.
Like, that's not really in our frame of thinking.
We oftentimes answer that question.
Yes.
And we're like,
we get asked that a lot. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure because it is, you know, I sat down with an older, and I told you I was raised on reggae music, and reggae music was very political.
Right.
But people listening to the music, I don't think always realized how political it really was or how rebel music really was. You know, they're just listening to it and figured, you know, it's like Bob Marley, right? So they just, like, connect it with that.
Right.
But that's what I thought, you know, being introduced to you guys about a year ago, that's what I thought. I was like, wow, this is like how I was raised on reggae music. This is like Mexican music, but it's like rebellious.
Yeah.
And I was like, yes. Yeah. And then to hear your guys' voices all in there, I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think what we consider what we're doing is we're telling our stories, and we're telling the stories of our parents and of our communities and of what we believe in. And I think the things that we believe in to us don't feel so out of this world, and unfortunately in this world they are, you know, somewhat out of this world. And so I think that's why we get labeled so easily as political, because we're saying stuff sort of against the mainstream grain,
right?
But yeah, again, I think we're just singing very simple concepts that we believe, like, everyone should be treated with respect.
Yeah. Which like, is kind of amazing too, right? Because you say stuff like that, and then people on the outside are like, that's very political.
Right,
like,
but it's like, no, really? That's just basic. Like,
yeah. Yes, because I say stuff like that, or I get told, like, oh, okay, well, what you're saying is, like, people don't want to support, you know, the podcast. And I'm like, well, but what I'm doing is something, like, very simple, very good, and very from a loving place. So why are you seeing it as so evil and aggressive and loud?
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. One time we were in Montana, and Montana, you like how I said that? We're in Montana, where we do a lot of kids shows, like assemblies.
Okay.
And a lot of people don't know that about us. We do a lot of college tours, so we do, like, discussions and workshops around identities, alternative storytelling. What is going on, my sister?
She's speaking her truth.
She's letting you know.
She's inspired right now with those snacks.
So I didn't know you guys did
we
that.
Yeah, we do that. And I think it's one of my favorite things to do. Because a lot of times we go to these really prestigious universities where we have, like, a handful of, like, kids of color from the hood who got, like, scholarships. And we're like, hell yeah, you're here. And they're like, we are slowly, you know, our spirits are dying. And we're like, no, like, there's a reason you're here, and you have to interrupt the mainstream view of what it means to be an academic, and what it means, like, these spaces and the universities were not made for us, but we need to infiltrate and, like, be the best, like, we can be, but also understand you carry a lot. Be compassionate with yourself, but also demand a lot, because these schools are getting, you know, they're getting the diversity, inclusion little check mark, but they need to serve you.
Right.
Like, if they don't know how, then you need to tell them and teach them how.
Right.
Right? Because you deserve that. And so we're in the school in Montana, and, like, you know, at the end of the show, the folks who brought us out were, like, so excited, and then she came out crying, and we're like, what happened?
Yeah.
Like, you're everything okay? And she's like, yeah, that there was these two kids, they were junior high, that the whole show, you know, at these shows, like, kids get crazy, they get all excited. These kids were, like, sitting and quiet the whole time, and she asked them, like, so you didn't like it? And they're like, you know, and she's like, what's wrong? And they said, no, we liked it. And she asked, like, well, what's going on? Like, our parents said we're not supposed to like them. We're not supposed to. And, you know, most of these kids were white. And she's like, well, you didn't like them? And they're like, no, we really liked them. And so they were having this moment of like, and she's like later told us, oh yeah, there's a lot of white supremacists here. And we're like, can you give us a higher paycheck? Because
he's like putting our life in danger.
So
in
danger right now.
I'm saying, you know, it's like at risk.
Right.
Give me like that extra little.
Right.
Because, you know, that's also something for us to like work through.
Right.
You know, but so these kids, you know, were having connection with us, like brown people, mm-hmm. who were talking about, you know, no borders and viva la mujer and like everyone is beautiful.
Excellent.
And they were, you know, coming from a home who said you're not supposed to basically like Mexicans, those people, which was us. But they, you know, they were in a place where they had to then decide for themselves.
Right.
And so we never go around telling people how to, like, how to be in their own politicized state or how to be their own activist in a community. We don't know what their community is like. We don't know what their experience is. But we're simply offering these very, again, very basic, you know, very basic concepts of, like,
being a decent human, being a good person.
You know, and being a proud of where you're from and letting other people be proud of where they're from and speak different languages.
That's it.
Like, that's such an exposure that they wouldn't have if you guys didn't go there and deliver that. So I'm sure, too, like, that's something that's going to stick to them. And they're going to remember that, too. And next time their parents are saying stuff, they're going to be like,
actually,
I actually listened to this group and I really enjoyed them, like, and what they had and what they were delivering. And that's like, that can be very confusing.
Yeah,
for
it's
kids,
critical thinking for sure. Like, they, you know, there's a point in everyone's life where you have to kind of go, you know, you have to think outside of what your home taught you.
Right.
And
I think that's an offering.
It is difficult.
And I like that you say that it's an offering because it is something that you're giving, you know, to this community that wouldn't normally have it. Because I do think that, you know, that's why people struggle with identity issues so much. And I think it's because, you know, we start getting older and we start questioning what we learned in our homes, right? And question how to move forward with it if we believe something different or feel something different, right? And then we don't want to be disrespectful to our family and what they may think or believe, but it is very, like, you know, if this is how I feel, like, why am I feeling this way? Is it because I'm being influenced by someone else? And then you start, you know, I remember becoming, you know, getting older and start questioning my parents and the things that I've learned from them. And that was hard for me. That hurt because it's like, no, I'm supposed to look at them in a certain light.
Right.
But that didn't mean they were right in everything either. They did the best they could, but now I started learning other things and taking in other things in the world.
And their knowledge and wisdom served them, or maybe not, you know?
Right.
And I think when I first started learning, like going to my women's studies classes in college, I was really angry at my mom. You know, I would come back and be like, stop serving him, stop making his food to my, about my dad. But I was very ignorant in that privileged place that I was, you know.
Right,
I then started going to, like, Chicana studies classes and women of color classes, like Black Studies, and understanding, like, you know, the feminisms that I am cultivating within myself also understands, like, where my people come from and where my the home that my mom wants to build, and that she was very powerful in that kitchen because that's where she was the boss or is the boss. She's the boss in my house, but I didn't see her through a different lens that way. And so, like, humbling myself and putting and stepping back and still learning from that wisdom that my mom has to share, because I'm constantly learning. I'm still very small in this universe. And I think that's, again, in Las Cafeteras, something that I've been able to learn, like, you know, have pride and honor yourselves and your peoples. Give space for people to then, like, be reflective and curious. But always be in a place of learning.
Right.
You know, always be in a place of learning.
And being able to take yourself out of that and look at your mom as a woman and not just your mom is so important to be able to do, and to look at my parents like that too and forget, like, okay, I know that's my Bobby and my mom, but they're also people. And they're also, for me to look at them as a person and not be so judgmental.
Yeah,
with things.
And their struggles are not my struggles to take on.
Yeah.
I learn from it, and then I move on, and then again, take what serves you, reflect on what doesn't, and and make your decision.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Coming to the end of this podcast, what would you guys give as advice to the young Chicana Latinas that are out there that are afraid to make moves on the things that they're doing right now in their life? I feel there's a lot of them out there, and a lot of ideas.
I'm so inspired by younger, like, brown women. Wow. I'm so, like, I guess because I'm, like, totally lit on by Instagram. I think there's still a lot of
young girls holding back.
Yeah.
Feel like they have all these things, and they want to do all these things, and be an entrepreneur, and start their own business, and go off and do something, and... You know, draw the painting that they've had in their mind, but they're so intimidated and so scared. What would you give them as advice?
Hit it, D.
I would say surround yourself with the people who see the magic in you. I would say treat yourself as your best friend would treat you. And I would say just tomorrow is one day. Try it tomorrow. If it doesn't work, try something else the next day.
What's the worst that can happen? And when you really think about that question, I remember before opening People's Yoga, and my business partner, she's very she's just very, like, cautious. Uh-huh. She's very careful. She's very responsible. And she's very, like, grounded. Where I'm more of, like, a air, like, let's do this and let's do that. Like, creative ideas. Like, let's do it all. Let's go for it.
You are that person.
Yes.
You're like, yeah, that makes sense.
And I remember having a talk with her, you know, before we were going to open, because we were really nervous because there was no, you know, we essentially, like, created a business with zero to little business experience. Mm-hmm. We don't have, like, backgrounds in business. And we plotted ourselves in a place that had no market research. So we're basically, we're like, here's this new business, and we don't know if we have customers.
Right, right.
Which is very risky. You know, and it just came from a lot of heart and passion. And I remember talking to her before we opened, and I was like, you know what? What's the worst that can happen? And we decided that the worst thing that could happen is we would go bankrupt. And I said, to me, that's not the end of the world. I can handle that.
Yeah.
You know, like, if that happens, okay, cool, I deal with it. And then you move on with your life. So I feel like a lot of what I do is sort of, I check in with that question, like, what's the worst? And if I can handle the worst of that scenario,
then go for it.
Let's do it. And I think what I've learned through having, especially through having People's Yoga, but just in general, is that a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of people that already have their business and are maybe, like, ahead of the game, wherever you're at, a lot of them will answer whatever questions you have. Like, a lot of entrepreneurs are really happy to share what they've learned.
Yeah.
So not to, you know, like, do your own research, you know, like, respect people's time, of course. But a lot of people are really willing and excited to, you know, because it's kind of like a bragging moment of, like, I did this, and you can do it too.
Yeah, this is what I accomplished. Yeah. Like, and now you can do it too.
Right. Yeah. And so I think, like, don't be afraid to ask questions to people, you know, and like Denise said, to build a network that's going to cheer you on and make sure you're still striving towards whatever goal you have.
Well, thank you, ladies, so
thank
much
you.
For
that was
allowing
fun.
Me, like I said, again, into your space and into your life, and allowing my listeners in to find out more about the women that are leading Las Cafeteras.
Yeah!
You guys are chingonas, I love it. So.
Do you have questions for Ella? Do you want to say hi? No? You want to see?
Oh, now she doesn't. Aww. She's all, now you guys are paying attention to me.
All right, thank you.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Until then, fist up, chingonas.